B61. Number 8B.
Now, in a way, I said, this is how John Dolly crystallized out of his experience and out of the textbook a method of treatment. And you would be right in saying, well, is that not just John Dolly's concept? Has not somebody else another concept? And actually, the way I have presented it, you would be right to ask that question. And therefore, I'm going to correct what I have been saying insofar as I'm going to say, no, it's only John Dolly that brought it to our notice, but actually, it's in the textbook. Which chapter in the textbook does actually deal with treatment, with practice? Well, the 12th chapter. So if you take the next page, 37, of your study aid, we could have a look at that 12th chapter and see, does that chapter, which is, I think, nearly 80 pages and therefore much more explicit than the crystallized method that I have been given as John Dolly's method, does that chapter over those 80 pages really not confirm the fundamental method that we have been discussing? And so you have on that page 37, you have the structure of the chapter, Christian Science Practice. You know that perhaps from the summer school, but here we can recapitulate it and perhaps see much clearer now what it means and how important that is. That chapter has four parts, as we know, and these four parts are listed here on page 37 in the four columns. The three first columns seem to have much to do with the practitioner. You have that title there, practitioner. And the last column, the fourth part, has to do with the patient. What now does Mrs. Eddy, in that long discussion of treatment, present in those four parts? And we know that in that first part of the practitioner, she shows through love and mind, really, how the practitioner himself must be. Now, this is a very important point to see that a practitioner actually should first prove himself and heal himself in order to practice, that he cannot practice out of an empty consciousness, out of a really insufficient consciousness, but that he himself first must establish within himself the true practitioner, really to be an example or be a representative of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, as it is shown here, that he himself must first see only perfection, that without that he is not a real practitioner. Can you see, the very first thing is to go out from perfection, not from the problem, right from the beginning, to see it and say to the Mary Magdalene and say, thy sins are forgiven thee. I can only see the perfect idea, that he himself must be first good and pure, that he himself must first be selfless, free from self, that at the point of principle he must first show that he can win his own pardon scientifically. This is quite an important point, that the practitioner must first really see that he can forgive himself not in a religious way, but in a scientific way, namely by seeing that in science man is sinless, that man cannot do anything wrong. That is a scientific fact which he must first see for himself. And that at the point of life, that he himself must have a full consciousness and experiencing the fullness of life. He must have a consciousness that really is like a well of life out of which can flow the infinite life, and being willing to lay down the mortal concept. This is always the crux, life. Are we willing to lay down the mortal concept? And the practitioner himself first must somehow show forth in his life that ability, that willingness to give up his personal I, his mortal self, and before he can ask the patient that he changes, that he is giving up his resistance to the truth. That at the point of truth, that the practitioner himself first must grow into a Christian manhood, into the stature and fullness of the Christ manhood, so that he is not just an ordinary mortal who says, well, I'm just going to think properly and then I can heal. He cannot. He cannot heal by thinking properly if he himself has not some kind of a stature of manhood. He can't. Because Christian Science healing is not thinking, it's really the embodiment of truth, the embodiment of life. And he must have that wonderful trust and hope where he can really anticipate the fulfillment of the idea of his treatment, so that he himself is not doubting, that he himself is sure about his treatment, and therefore can always anticipate the fulfillment, even then when he does not yet see the effect of it and the result of it. That's a quality that a practitioner must have in order to be a practitioner in the first place. So that goes before, really, that what John Dolley gave as a method. He accepted that if somebody is a practitioner, that he has first practiced on himself and has for himself shown forth a certain amount, a certain measure of being the Christ selfhood. But then Mrs. Eddy goes on and says, now, what does the practitioner entertain in consciousness? It's now saying what John Dolley said, put the problem behind you and look second into the infinitude of the infinite mind. Look into the synonymous term of God. That's what the second column now says. It's truth and mind. It's to see with the divine mind the truth about being, the truth about the whole of being. So he must know the truth. That would be now that step two, which we had in John Dolley's method, to look into the infinitude of mind and build up a true consciousness, truth and mind. The truth that we entertain in the divine mind. And so Mrs. Eddy gives here, then, so the 7x7, here we only have the main points in it. Build up in your consciousness what really truth is. And so you begin here, as Mrs. Eddy showed it, that we begin to build up that mind is all. And we see what that allness of mind means. We build up, the practitioner builds up at the point of spirit, that spirit is the only reality, that there is no other reality, no material reality. That spirit is the only reality. And builds up the nature of God as soul, that we have to do with incorporeal things, not with corporeal bodies, but with the incorporeality and the sinlessness of man, thy build-up really soul, the sinlessness of soul, the incorporeality of soul, the immortality of soul, and therefore man as the sinless incorporeal idea of soul. I build that up, and I come to truth, and she says, well, make now these three your basis of demonstration. That will be your principle. Mind, spirit, soul will be now your principle. The science and the metaphysics will be your basis for demonstration. Don't go away from that. Don't sidestep it anymore. Stick to that terrific sense. And then see that life is life, and that life is the only provider and supporter and sustainer of man. He sustains eternally man as idea. And that at the point of truth, we see that man has dominion through consciousness, that truth is consciousness, and that therefore man has the consciousness of truth, has the saving consciousness of truth, and finally see the perfection of man, that he is never under a penalty. That sense that he suffers because that is his penalty, free him from the law of penalty. Love knows no penalty. Love only knows its own perfection. Free everyone, free the patient of a sense that he has to suffer and that it is right to suffer because he must be penalized for wrong thinking, for wrong doing. Can you see how here, in this column, really, Mrs. Eddy says, now, like in Trondoli's layout, to fill your consciousness with God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. If you fill your consciousness with that, then Trondoli said, then that will have the ability really to show forth the true answer. Mrs. Eddy here shows this here and says, you know, you really get the true answer if you stick with the second column here. If you really have that consciousness of life and soul which sticks with what you have seen and doesn't waver and doesn't give in, only in that way, really, then your treatment has a Christ office, has a Christ power, and begins to operate. In that column, you can see, really, that she appeals to the scientist within us and says, you know, you have given a treatment. Now, at the point of mind, that treatment is the law to a situation. That's a law. Don't sidestep anymore that law. It's the law of mind. Therefore, trust that law. The moment we have a law, we can trust it. Because we know a law is unchangeable and therefore cannot be gainsaid anymore, it cannot be trespassed and so on. It is a law and the law operates. And it says at the tone of spirit that this is the only substance. Build on that. Trust on that. Don't give in. Don't waver. Don't vacillate. Stick with that. Build on that substance of the law of mind. And in soul it says, this is the rule of soul, that you see that this treatment has supremacy over every situation. That soul is supreme and that the greater can control the lesser. So that your treatment is the higher and that the problem is the lower. And that the higher has supremacy and is supreme and can control the lower. And that is as principle begins to govern the situation. And there you begin to see that principle begins to operate and begins to move in a situation and begins to change a situation, it begins to operate in a situation, it brings order where there was chaos, and so it begins to move. And as it begins to move, we can see that life is the immortality of life, that what is brought forth through that principle is that immortal aspect of the problem which has to be brought out, so that the mortal side of things has to be laid down, and is being laid down, will be overcome by the ever-supporting sense of life. It's terrific when you see then as truth that you see that consciousness is really the form of truth, and that man is the consciousness of truth, where you begin to see that the man knows what is true, that we know that he knows the truth about any situation. We don't anymore negate that he does not know the truth about the situation, and so we give, really, we stick to that terrific sense that truth is consciousness, and therefore that man is conscious of the truth, and therefore sticks to the truth, therefore establishes in himself the true manhood, until finally we see there must be a sense of fulfillment in being, because being is always fulfilling itself in the perfection of love. So can you see through this attitude of life a soul, which says, what is life, what is, I must see as unchangeable. So, that what I have established in my treatment in the second column is of the nature of isness, because it's God, it's of the nature of isness, and that isness doesn't waver anymore, doesn't change anymore. That cannot be debunked, that cannot be affected through anything that has a identity, an unchangeability that cannot be touched. And so you, in your treatment, you really stick to the conviction of your treatment. Can you see that? So then Dorlis shows then that that treatment then begins to show us the true idea, which is the fact about the counterfeit, that that true idea then begins to correct the counterfeit, and that is the fourth column. In that fourth column, you really get then the healing process. And there she shows in a wonderful way how that healing process takes place. That it says that healing process rests first of all on the science of mind and not on argumentation. It's here in this fourth part that Mrs. Eddy takes up the method of argumentation and says, all right, if you don't know anything better, you argue about it, but actually this is not Christian Science. Actually, what is a Christian Science treatment is to rely on the science of mind. And you only argue because you haven't got the spirit of mind, the spirit of love. Therefore, you argue because you don't know any better. But she does it, she deals with it in a few sentences, and that's all in the whole textbook of 600 pages where she deals with argumentation. But she said, actually, you know, the healing process is a process that must be based on the science of mind. Only the divine mind can heal. And that begins, at the point of spirit, begins to create order where there was disorder. Can you hear now the healing process is shown? And shows that that divine mind, which is the science of mind, our spirit begins to order things. And it's that point where we feel suddenly something begins to change, either in the mentality of the patient or in the surrounding of the patient. Something begins to change. And out of disorder, order arises. And so, soul says, in this way a translation takes place. It's all about translation taking place, that we have here now the real exchanging of the objects of sense for the ideas of soul. Can you see now it's no more a metaphysical process, it's now the end product of the science of mind, of the science healing, and says that brings about, through the ordering of things, naturally brings about the exchanging of the objects of sense for the ideas of soul, and the translation takes place. What and where does that translation take place? Everywhere where an exchange must take place, in principle, it says that it reaches every part of the system. So that we see that the principle of science is that which reaches every idea of that principle, therefore every aspect of that principle, that we don't have to direct principle to a situation, that principle itself knows what has to be corrected and reaches every part of the system. Can you see how the healing takes place? Goes now to that point, to that specific point that needs to be corrected. And so the effect of it is the healing, which Mrs. Eddy, in the tone of life, truth and love, shows that that brings a renewal of life, that that which seemed to have been dying out is renewed to life, because life is anyway eternal and cannot be killed, cannot die, and so it establishes in the patient, through the renewal of life, eternal life, through perfect health, and so shows in love that it is the solution to every problem. There is not one problem that is excluded, that cannot be touched by that practice. Can you see that? Isn't it terrific? Now, can you see, so often students come along and say, you know, actually, I love to study, and I just love to study, and I can sit for hours and study. But they say, but actually, I don't know how to give a treatment. And I don't know why they ask that, because they have it on their in their hands. The whole chapter on practice shows how to give a treatment. But the point is, and that is perhaps what we can discuss quickly, the point is that the student thinks that the treatment must be right at the beginning, so specific that it can only be effective when it is right at the beginning, very specific, because they know what Mrs. Eddy also has said, that the specific error must be handled by a specific truth. And so they are bothered because they say, I don't know the specific truth. So what do I do? If I don't know it, I don't know what the specific truth is about that specific error. Can you see they are still thinking metaphysically? They are still going out from the problem and say, this is a specific problem, it's unique, it has never happened before, therefore it needs a specific truth. Can you see that they still are thinking metaphysically, to reason from the problem to the idea? Yes? And therefore they don't know how to give a treatment, because they don't know and can't know the specific truth. Therefore, they must have a completely different attitude to what a treatment is. And the chapter 12 gives that whole method of what the treatment is, so that everybody can go back, say, and say, well, I feel that the first column, I am what I am, so there I that I have to accept as given, but now what do I do with my mentality? And there they should see that they could go to the second, right away to the second column, and say, a treatment is when I fill my mind, capital M, with the truth, capital truth. How can I fill and see mind and truth? I can only see it if I put into that infinite mind really all the seven synonymous terms of what they are and how they constitute the whole nature of God. Everybody can do that because you know now the synonymous terms. Yes? So actually you know how to give a treatment. The point is that you didn't believe that that is a treatment, because you didn't know the specific truth. But if we start right without seeing what the specific truth is and say, let that be revealed to me by the divine mind, then I go first to that second column of truth and mind and fill my consciousness with the nature of God, that is the truth about the nature of God, and that that nature of God is at the point of mind, where I'm one with that mind, I have that mind which is God, and I have no other mind but that mind which is God, and that mind which is God within me knows the truth, knows the seven synonymous term. So by golly, can you see the bigness of what we do? We establish within us God's own consciousness. And then the third column comes and says, stick to that through hell and high water. Don't give in anymore. What you have established there is the law of mind. That's the law of treatment. That's the law of mind. That is the truth about everything. And go right through that third column and see that we are not going to budge from our treatment. And see that really the solution is established, because it is a law of mind, because it's the substance of spirit, because it's a rule of soul, because it's the system of principle, because it's a method of life, and because it's a form of truth, and because it's a plane of love, it's established. And then you still say, well, does that do a trick? Does that do the trick? Can you see where you fail? You don't trust God. Huh? You don't trust your consciousness. Mrs. Eddy says, if you do that, truth and mind and life as soul, then the last column says, that begins to change things. Then the healing process can start. Then you have built on the divine mind, then that begins to create order, that order out of disorder therefore brings a transformation and a translation in soul, and that reaches every part of the system, even if you don't know which part must be reached, but you know that it does reach every part of the system, and that that has the nature of life, that it does elevate and exalt the situation into the eternal reality of life and truth and love. That's treatment. Can you see? What is necessary is just to have a different attitude to what the treatment is, and not to hang on to what you have learned 40 or 50 years ago in the church. That was argumentation. That was metaphysics. That was not science. And Mrs. Eddy never taught that in the textbook. She only taught the beginners way back in 1870 and 80 that treatment of argumentation, of affirming and denial. Don't hang back 100 years. We are today. Don't go back to that outworn metaphysical treatment of going out from a problem and reason from the problem to the idea. This is not science. Okay, now you know how to give a treatment.